It is Palm Sunday, and I do want to touch on that this morning some. As we look at what happened in the week leading up to Easter, and there's a lot of aspects and a lot of different things that transpired over the course of that week. And in all reality, it's probably the most important event that happened in our history as far as our spirituality is concerned. It's a pretty major event. It's a very major event. And so I'd like to look at that, but in order for us to grasp what went on there, we're going to have to go on a bit of a journey in our minds. And if I can, I've never been there, but I'm sure we've all seen pictures and we've seen what it's like in present day Jerusalem, perhaps in news clips and in videos of what's going on there now. There's small crowded streets, there's dust everywhere, and if we draw our minds back to 2,000 years ago, we can maybe somewhat put together in our mind what it was like in Jerusalem as people were gathering for the Passover. It was a pretty major event. It had lots of different aspects to that event. It kind of encapsulated three different feasts. There was the feasts that were being performed throughout that week. It was the Feast of the Unleavened Bread, the Feast of the First Fruits, and the Passover. And an enormous amount of people were gathering in the city. People came from far and near for the Passover feast. Now, if we take a step back just a little bit before what was going to go on Palm Sunday, we can read in John chapter 11, verse 54. He talks about, "And Jesus therefore walked no more openly among the Jews, but went thence into the country near to the wilderness, into a city called Ephraim, and there continued with his disciples. And the Jews' Passover was nigh at hand, and many went out of the country up to Jerusalem before the Passover to purify themselves. Then sought they for Jesus, and spake amongst themselves as they stood in the temple, 'What think ye, that he will not come to the feast?'" It's a question that they're asking. Now, they had already plotted to kill Jesus. And it says, "Now both the chief priests and the Pharisees had given a commandment that if any man knew where he were, he should show it, that they might take him." They were extremely worried about Jesus coming to the Passover. They did not want him there. But the time was going to come that Jesus was going to reveal himself. So Jesus goes up to Lazarus' house that previous weekend before the Passover, and he's spending some time there. It had only been a few weeks since that he had raised Lazarus from the dead, and that had drawn a lot of attention. So we're going to slide down into verse chapter 12 a little ways, and it says in verse 9, "Now much people of the Jews therefore knew that he was there, and they came not for Jesus' sake only, but that they might see Lazarus also, whom had been raised up from the dead. But the chief priests consulted that they might put Lazarus also to death, because that by reason of him many of the Jews went away and believed on Jesus." This was a very, very hard thing for them to accept. Now, here we are. The next day, So this procession makes its way down to Jerusalem, and it says, on the next day, much people that were come to the feast, when they heard that Jesus was coming to Jerusalem, took branches of palm trees and went forth to meet him and cried, Hosanna, blessed is the King of Israel that cometh in the name of the Lord. This was quite the procession. This was a really, really big procession that came down from the mount, and they were entering Jerusalem as this occasion. It is interesting that in my commentary says the people who went out to meet Jesus as he was approaching Jerusalem were crying, Hosanna. The word in the Hebrew expression meaning save, and later became expression of praise. Thus, the people were shouting, save now. So if we can imagine what was going on, it was a busy place. Lots of people from all over the country were coming to Jerusalem for to be cleansed and to take part of the Passover. It was a big deal. It was very festive. There was lots of people, and the place was charged with energy because they were already, we've seen the beginning, they were already anticipating that Jesus was going to come to the feast. The people were also at this point in time sick and tired of being under the Roman rule. They had been oppressed and they had been taxed repeatedly, so that because of the Romans' drive to conquer the world, and they needed the known world at least, and they needed funds to keep going. Now there was news, and Jesus was coming to town, and they wanted to see him be made king. They knew enough about him that he had supernatural powers. They knew enough about what was going on. They knew enough about prophecy that this Jesus that was coming on this donkey had some kind of king authority. I can't imagine what that looked like. But there must have been just a thrill in the air. There must have been just a huge procession following him and chanting that. But if we look at what the Jews were seeing, I don't think they were seeing humble Jesus riding on a donkey coming into Jerusalem. In their minds, what they were seeing was a king on a horse wearing valiant armor that was going to come and he was going to physically overthrow the Romans. That's what they were seeing in their mind's eye. That's what they were hoping for. That's what they had been praying for years. And that Jesus would have the authority to come in and do that. That's what they were seeing in their mind's eye. I believe. Jesus had authority. And he had more authority than any man that ever walked the earth. But that's not what he was coming to execute. He was not coming to execute earthly authority. Jesus was ready to fulfill the prophecy in Zechariah. And Jesus knew what he was setting into motion. He was setting the last week of his life into motion. He saw the picture, the real picture of what was going on in Jerusalem there. He saw a people that were traditional. He saw a people that were works driven. He saw people that had been lost and misguided for years. They were coming to Jerusalem to pay interest. They were coming to pay interest on a generational loan. A loan that they had no way of paying down. There was no way they were going to get rid of the burden of that sin that they were carrying. There was no way for them to get rid of it but to cover it yet one more time with blood of lambs. That was what Jesus was seeing. a very, very needy people. People that absolutely had no idea what they needed saved from. They thought they needed saved from the Roman oppression, but they had a heart condition that they needed to be saved from. They needed a different freedom than they were looking for. And Jesus knew this, and Jesus knew what was at the end of the road for him. It was certain death. In the four Gospels, they all, in different ways, write about and express what they seen in this account. And I wish we had time to look at all the different dimensions of it. But time won't allow for that. But John says in John chapter 12, 20 and 23, even the Gentiles' interest, the Greeks' interests were spiked. And they wanted to come see and listen to this Jesus, that this murmuring was going around, that he was coming to town and what was going to happen. It was God's ordained time for the Christ to be revealed and for the Christ to be glorified. In Luke, when the Pharisees ask that Jesus should silence the people that were praising him, this was as they were heading into Jerusalem, Jesus says that if he were to do that, the very stones would cry out to him in praise. Jesus was going to be recognized no matter if people were silenced or not. This was his time. This morning, I'd like to draw some points out, and we're going to read some in Matthew chapter 21. And I want to draw attention to the different, to Jesus' authority, the authority Jesus had as God in man. We're going to read Matthew chapter 21, 1 through 11. It says, "And when they draw nigh unto Jerusalem, they were come to Bethphage, unto the Mount of Olives. And then sent Jesus two disciples, saying unto them, Go into the village over against you, and straightway ye shall find an ass tied, and a colt with her. Loose them, and bring them unto me. And if any man say aught unto you, ye shall say, The Lord hath need of them, and straightway he will send them. All this was done, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the prophet, saying, Tell ye the daughter of Zion, Behold, thy king cometh unto thee, meek and sitting upon an ass, and a colt the foal of an ass. And the disciples went and did as Jesus commanded them, and brought the ass and the colt, and put on them their clothes, and they set him thereon. And a very great multitude spread their garments in the way. Others cut down branches of the trees and strawed them in the way. And the multitudes that went before, that followed, cried, saying, Hosanna to the Son of David. Blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord. Hosanna in the highest. And when he had come into Jerusalem, all the city was moved, saying, Who is this? And the multitude said, This is Jesus, the prophet of Nazareth of Galilee. The first thing that Jesus needed to do was fulfill that prophecy. And he had the authority to do that. He had the authority, God-given authority, to do that. In that day, there was a custom called Angoraia. And it was a custom that a dignitary or a religious leader could request livestock at will. And so he was in a position where he had the authority to do that. He had the authority to call for the livestock that he needed to fulfill that prophecy. and to establish who he was through that prophecy. That was Jesus' calling. That's what he was called to do. But the people had a misconception. We have to remember that the Passover was also a celebration of the time when they were released from bondage in Egypt. And they had been wishing for a deliverer for a long time. And when Jesus rode in there with that, on that donkey, they knew enough about that prophecy that they thought that this king was come to release them of the bondage of the Roman rule. But Jesus' kingdom was not of this world. That was not what he came to do. Reading down verse 12, and Jesus went into the temple of God and cast out all them that sold and bought in the temple. And he overthrew the tables of the money changers and the seats of them that sold doves. And he said unto them, it is written, my house shall be called the house of prayer, but ye have made it a den of thieves. Jesus had the authority to clean his father's house. He had the authority to drive the money changers and the sellers out of his father's house. He knew intimately, because he was God, he knew what God desired for his house. And it wasn't people selling livestock for exorbitant amounts of money to the people that were coming from afar off that couldn't bring stock for their offerings. He knew what God's intent was for his house, and he despised the people exploiting the house of God for profit. And my question came to my mind is, do I personally understand what Jesus desires of me in worship, in my worship? Do I understand what he wants and desires from me? This is not the first time he cleaned the temple like that. He did it again. He did it before in John chapter 2, just after he had turned the water into wine at the wedding. He came down and went to his father's house and overturned a few tables that time. And ever since that, the religious leaders have had an ire for him and have dogged him in his travels and in his ministry. And it's been grating on him ever since then. But he had the authority to clean God's house and to purge it. Next verse down in verse 14, it says, and the blind and the lame came to him in the temple, and he healed them. He healed them. They weren't afraid because of Jesus cleansing the temple of all the wrongs that went in there. They knew what Jesus had the power to do, and he had the authority to heal them. He had the authority over their body and over the sicknesses. The blind and the lame and numerous others came. And one area that really stood out to me in my studies was in Mark chapter 2, and how it expresses his authority to heal. Mark chapter 2. So it was the man that had the faith to take the roof off. Some of his friends had the faith to take the roof off and let him down into the room that Jesus was sitting and teaching, because they could not, it was so full, they couldn't get in at any of the entrances. It says, when Jesus saw their faith, when he let this man down, he said unto the sick of palsy, son, thy sins be forgiven thee. But there were certain of the scribes sitting there and reasoned in their hearts, why does this man thus speak blasphemies? Who can forgive sins but God? And immediately, when Jesus perceived in his spirit that they so reasoned within themselves, he said unto them, why reason ye these things in your hearts? Whether is it easier to say to the sick of the palsy, thy sins be forgiven thee, or to say, arise and take up thy bed and walk? But that ye may know that the Son of Man hath the power on earth to forgive sins. And he saith to the sick of palsy, I say unto thee, arise, take up thy bed, and go thy way unto thine house. And immediately he arose and took up his bed and went forth before them all, insomuch as they were all amazed and glorified God, saying, we never saw it on this fashion. They never seen it like that before. And he said it right there, that he had the power, he had the authority to forgive sins. This man's faith had not only made his body whole, but made his soul whole. He had the power to do that. Back in Matthew chapter 12, talks again about healing. It talks about, in fact, verse 15 says, when Jesus knew it, he withdrew himself thence, and the great multitudes followed him. And he healed them all and charged them that they should not make him known. He didn't want it to be talked about, but he healed them all. He had the power and he had the authority to do that. The next part in that chapter, he was worthy of praise. Verse 15 of chapter 21 in Matthew says, they seen the children crying in the temple, saying, Hosanna to the Son of David. He was worthy of that praise. He knew who he was. He knew that they were praising God, and he did not rebuke them. Even the children and the people around them knew that he was the Son of David. He was the king, even though they had a misconception of the king. Let's read a little further there in verse 18. It says, now the morning was come. Now in the morning, as he returned to the city, he hungered. Then he saw a fig tree in the way, and he came to it, and found nothing thereon but the leaves only, and said unto it, let no fruit grow on thee henceforth forever. And presently the fig tree withered away. Then the disciples saw it, they marveled, saying, how soon is the fig tree withered away? And Jesus answered and said unto them, verily I say unto you, if ye have faith and doubt not, ye shall not only do this which is done to the fig tree, but also if ye shall say unto this mountain, be thou moved, be thou cast into the sea, it shall be done. And all these things, whatsoever ye ask in prayer, believing, ye shall receive. Jesus had the authority to curse the fig tree, and it responded almost instantaneously. I think this is the only negative miracle that Jesus performed, as far as I know. It's the only negative thing that he performed where something absolutely went to nothing at his command. It symbolized the green Israel. It symbolized the people that looked good on the outside. They were doing the things that they thought were right on the outside, but they produced no fruit. And it portrays Jesus' displeasure in unfruitfulness. Number 6, Jesus' authority to answer prayers. He made a very big promise. in verse 21 and 22. He said, in all things whatsoever ye shall ask in prayer, believing, ye shall receive. We have to believe in Jesus. That's the only way we can have that kind of faith, is if we believe and walk with Jesus. Number 7, his authority. He spake with authority. He did not ask anyone for permission because he did not need to. He was God. He did not need to ask for permission because he was God and he knew what was right. He was not subject to any being on earth. Matthew chapter 7 talks about that a little bit. Verses 28 and 29. It says, and it came to pass when Jesus had ended these sayings, the people were astonished at his doctrine, for he taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes. And I was curious, what did it mean, not as the scribes? And the scribes didn't want to take any responsibility for anything they said. So they, if we read in different books, which I did a little bit of research on, if we read in different books how the scribes taught, they always taught in phrases, and they would always mention as from the rabbi or as from the high priest, or from such and such philosopher, or from such and such a person. They never wanted to take any responsibility for what they taught. So they taught with no authority. And Jesus taught with authority. It says here that that's what just drew them to him. They were astonished with his doctrine. In Matthew 28, he says it. This is after the crucifixion, but he says the authority he has in that. 28 verse 18, he says, and Jesus came and spake unto them, saying, all power is given unto me in heaven and in earth. Go ye therefore and teach all nations. That was the great commission that he gave them afterwards. He had the authority to do that. But the chief priests and the elders of the land, they did not appreciate his authority. And I think in Mark chapter 11 has a fairly good account of what happened there. They challenged his authority. We read before that they were already waiting for him. They were already plotting to kill him. They did not like his presence there. They had not liked anything that he had done. They did not appreciate them, him not recognizing their religious authority. And so they felt challenged. So they were coming to him in the temple. So let's imagine this scenario. So he came into Jerusalem, and now he is speaking and walking in the temple. It says in verse 27, I believe. And it says, he came again into Jerusalem, and as he was walking in the temple. If you can imagine what the temple was like, with the walls and the gates and the courtyards of the temple, it encompassed approximately 35 acres. So this was a very large place. There was lots going on here. There was people coming and going. It was the week before the Passover. And there was a lot of stuff going on in the temple and in the temple courtyards. And he had been teaching and preaching there. And he had made quite a scene with the triumphal entry. Quite a parade into Jerusalem. And this is 2 days later, and he's walking in the temple. And Luke says he was teaching and preaching the gospel as he was in the temple. And I imagine he probably preached as he did in some of his parables that we can read. He talked about hypocrisy. He talked about judgment. He talked about hell. He talked about faith that saves, and he probably talked about the forgiveness of sin and what John the Baptist had taught. And the very walls of that temple rang with truths that hadn't been heard there for many, many years. And the people were drawn to it. They were absolutely glued to what he was saying. In Luke chapter 19, it says, I'm going to read from the Amplified version. It says, and he was teaching day after day in the temple, in the porches and the courts. But the chief priests and scribes and the leading men among the people were seeking a way to put him to death. And they could not find anything that they could do, for all the people stayed close to him and were hanging on to every word that he said. I think if there's any person that ever spoke, and if we ever had a chance to listen to, that would be the one that we would hang on to every word that he said. People were just soaking up the truths that he was teaching. And it was stepping on the religious leaders' toes. And so they came walking up to him, and they said, there came the chief priests and the scribes and the elders, and they say unto him, by what authority dost thou these things? And who gave thee this authority to do these things? What are you doing? Is what they're asking him. What are you doing here? What do you think you're doing coming into the temple on the week before the Passover teaching like this? They were challenging him. They were challenging God. But Jesus very effectively puts him between a rock and a hard spot when he says, and Jesus answered and said unto them, I will also ask you one question, and answer me, and I will tell you by what authority I do these things. The baptism of John, was it from heaven or of men? Answer me. And so they had to have a quick little meeting. You can see there's huddling off to the side here a little bit, and they got to talk about this for a little bit. And they reasoned with themselves, saying, if we shall say from heaven, he will say, then why did ye not believe him? But if we say of men, they feared the people. They kind of left a blank there. But if we say of men, and then there's a punctuation, they feared the people, for all men counted John that he was a prophet indeed. And they answered and said unto Jesus, we cannot tell. You think that came out easily? They were supposed to know everything. They were the Pharisees and the scribes. They were the chief priests. They were what made up the Sanhedrin of the temple. They were the law. They knew everything. We cannot tell. Jesus answers them, neither do I tell you by what authority I do these things. He wasn't going to walk into their trap. His time was not yet come to that. I can only imagine what it was like for the people to listen to Jesus preach and teach in the temple. Jesus was on his final mission, on his final week, final days before his crucifixion. The chief priests and the religious leaders were about beside themselves because the people were being taught, and they were being taught the truths, and their authority was being, what they felt was undermined. But I guess my question was, how do I look at Jesus? And what authority do I give Jesus in my life? Do I give him full sway and full authority over everything that happens in my life? Or am I balking against authority of Jesus like the religious leaders did in those days, where they wanted to maintain self and what they wanted to see in the people and what they wanted to see in their temples? Jesus had the authority to cleanse the temple. Is that what he's done for us? Is he have we given him the authority to cleanse our temple? Have we given him the authority to enter our hearts? Have we asked him to be the full, absolute ruling authority in our lives? These are questions that I just had as I was looking through this, studying through this Palm Sunday topic. There's a lot of avenues that we could go down and look at and talk about, because it's a very big part of what happened here. There's a lot of stuff that I never even touched on, but I just wanted to bring that challenge. What am I doing with my life? Am I giving Jesus the authority over my life, over my heart? Am I willing to give up self and just walk with Jesus? May God bless you.